disappointment there.
If Mr. Hanson's here, we can start.
I am the black sheep in some ways.
Since you're here, we'll start. We were waiting.
Okay.
Okay, we'll come to order. We don't have a quorum. We need 11. Well, sadly, Representative Pepin, I don't know why people aren't here to eagerly dig into your bill at the prompt time, but we're going to start anyway with Oakham. And so when the time comes, I'll move your bill. So let's come to order. We have two bills up today. Representative Pepin, you have a bill. I believe there's two clones or similar ones that are people have like this. Isn't that right? Representative Atkins has a similar one, and Franson, I believe, have bills that are. So you're in good company. A lot of people like your idea, apparently.
I wasn't aware.
I believe that's true. Anyway, so if you want to explain the bill, when we get a quorum, I'll move the bill.
Okay.
And it's going to be held over for possible inclusion.
Okay, well, it's pretty short. House File 2097 modifies the list of recognized accrediting organizations for which an accredited child care center may receive a rate differential under the Child Care Assistance Program. And the reason for this is that I want to modify the language because the language, the current statute as is, has resulted in picking winners and losers based strictly on who was named in the original statute. And so while I know that the organizations listed are, as far as I know, high-quality organizations, the statute as written excludes other high-quality accreditors. And so I want to address that issue by making, less specific language. And I have with me a few people who would like to testify to the bill.
Thank you. Maybe Mr. Dorman could be the first witness here. Would you like to come down to the committee, Mr. Representative Dorman here? This is actually, we're a little segue here. So pull up a chair. Have you met?
Yes.
This is former Representative Dan Dorman, who has a strong opinion on this matter about the accreditation of child care. I know it's been on his mind for a good long time.
You know,
is that right, Representative Dorman? You're the Elbert Lee Commissioner of...
The Admiral of the Port Authority, Mr.
Okay, thank you.
You have to be the Executive Director of an Economic Development Agency in a city like Elbert Lee, and it's a port authority, doesn't have a port. I want to be the admiral. So,
and do you have child care in Albert Lee?
We do. We're very pro child care,
and they are frequently accredited by somebody.
They absolutely are.
Well, that's great.
You know, I've carefully reviewed the legislation that's before the committee, and what I can tell you is that some of my friends are in favor of this legislation, and some of my friends are not. And I am with my friends. Clearly,
thank you. That's helpful. And just one more question, then I think I'll probably have to make you go. But if a person were looking for a place to relocate a business or open up a new child care, would Albert Lee be a good choice for that, and why would that be?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, you know, Albert Lee is the home of many fine companies and many fine child care providers now, so that would be clearly it. But probably the next list would be the people, outstanding workforce available to people. Give you a good deal on land. Say you want to move a chiropractic business to Elbert Lee, and could always use a new chiropractor in town, I'm sure. So,
and I have one more question. You attracted a question from another member, though. Is Elbert Lee a good place to raise your kids?
Absolutely.
Thanks. We're staying on topic, Representative Pepin. Never mind us here. Representative Huntley has a question.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Dorman, I was just wondering if you still drive a Dodge station wagon.
Mr. Dorman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, no, the Dodge Magnum has now went away, and it's been replaced by a Chevrolet Suburban. I try to switch companies every now and then. So, still have my Harley Davidson, however, which is even more important, particularly to child care.
Thank you. And do kids like riding on the Harley?
They did, and always, Mr. Chair and members, they would have a helmet on.
Of course, I presume upon that. So.
Right, exactly.
It's been enlightening having you stop by.
It has, and thank you for letting me testify on this important legislation. Anything I can do to help, let me know.
And enjoy your Diet Coke, which is kind of the trademark Dorman thing. Mm-hmm. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Pepin, do you have any other witnesses that would like to testify?
I don't know that any are necessary after that informative exchange. But maybe I will, just in case there are additional questions. I'll have Mr. Bergman identify himself. And did you want to? Same thing. We'll start with Mr. Bergman.
Welcome to the committee, sir. And never mind our good friends from the past here. It's good legislators are hard to find, and that one was especially important to me. So, welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me this time. I am Kenneth Bergman. I'm general counsel for Advance Ed. We are the nation's largest accreditation agency. We accredit approximately 30,000 institutions, primarily in 37 states and around the world. In Minnesota, we accredit 133 schools and accredit all of the St. Paul high schools as well. Advance Ed is the parent organization of NCA CASI, which has been the regional accrediting agency for this state. NCA CASI has been accrediting since 1895, so we have a rich history of providing accreditation. We have been in the early learning space for many years and continue to accredit early learning centers and facilities. As we've tried to go ahead and establish a market in Minnesota, we've had difficulties assisting the facilities that want to go ahead and the centers that want to go ahead and receive accreditation through our agency because of the language in the current statute.
Mr. Bergman, hang on a second. I'll call the meeting to order, and I will move House File 2097 be heard and held over for possible inclusion. So, now you have an official meeting in front of you.
Oh,
so
thank you.
Go ahead. Continue, sir.
So, when we took a look at the statute, we realized the quality, and we're not debating the quality of the institutions that are currently named in the statute, but we do believe that in order to best serve the public and to give choice to the learning centers, a different language within that statute would go ahead and give those centers the opportunity to choose an accrediting agency that provides services aligned with their philosophy. In our case, we have a alignment with our K through 12, so our early learning accreditation aligns with the K through 12 philosophy, which goes towards a lot of the thought and education regarding an aligned education system of P through 12 or even P through 20. When we developed our early learning standards, they also were developed with an idea of what you would look for as you transitioned children from early learning into K through 12. We also believe that it's very important for the centers in Minnesota have choice to go ahead and be able to drive improvement in accreditation, which only improves the centers that the fine centers that Minnesota already has here. And we would welcome the opportunity to go ahead and enter in this market in a way that would go ahead and continue to encourage higher standards that are aligned with the Minnesota standards as well. Our approach is a compliance approach along with a learning focus, and all of it is designed to create a learning center improvement so that our standards are constantly pushing our centers to be even better today, better tomorrow than they are today. Thank you for your consideration of this bill.
Members, are there questions for this witness, or do you want to hear all the testimony first? I guess we'll hear the testimony first. So, Representative Pepin, are those your witnesses, or are they other
people? Some of them.
Why don't you go through with the people that you set up to testify? Is that Ms. Carter?
Yep, Ms. Carter.
Okay. And she's done. Okay.
How about could we go to Ms. Keller here?
Welcome to the committee.
Come here. Sorry. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cisa Keller. I'm the Government Relations Committee Chair for the Minnesota Child Care Association. MCCA is an association of over 200 licensed and privately owned child care centers throughout the state of Minnesota. We're here today to discuss House File 2097. This bill intends to address the current accreditation statute that identifies which accrediting organizations are eligible to receive increased provider reimbursement rates for child care assistance. Accredited child care programs have shown both nationally and here in Minnesota to have better child outcomes and therefore should be eligible to receive reimbursements at this higher rate. The current list, though, is outdated, and it is a point-in-time list. MCCA believes that the statute is due to be revised and that these revisions must include criteria and standards that are relevant to the populations of the children served rather than a list of specific accreditations. MCCA has agreed to work with the authors to come to an agreement about this language, what it should look like, and we look forward to bringing this to this committee in the future. Thank you.
And so you're saying you don't agree with the bill the way it is, but you want to work on it and make it more appealing to yourselves, is that right?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. You know, in its current form, I don't think that it has, it doesn't address the standards and criteria that we would want to see to make sure that this really addresses early childhood programs and make sure that it aligns with the other initiatives we have in the state. So while we think it's definitely needs to be revised, we need some additional language in there. So in its current form, we do not support it, but we're looking forward to working with the author to come up with some better language.
So you're happy with the theme, just the...
I'm happy with the theme, correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Benscofer. I'm the Director of Policy and Communications at the Minnesota Association for the Education of Young Children, also known as MNACI. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today on House File 2097. MNACI's mission is to serve and act on behalf of early care and education professionals in Minnesota and to promote and support program quality. We have approximately 700 members who serve their communities in a variety of roles, from teachers to center directors to frontline staff. We also serve many non-members through our accreditation facilitation projects and our wide variety of professional development opportunities. We agree with what's been said today and the need to update the statute. We believe that the list of accrediting organizations should be removed, as the bill before you does, but we also believe that the statute must also include areas of quality that an accreditation organization must address in its standards and criteria before the increased reimbursement is available. MNACI is committed to working with Representative Pepin and others to craft language that upholds quality and ultimately benefits children and families seeking child care. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Benscofer, I think the name of your group is about the longest one I've seen in a long
yes.
time. If you might call it MNACI, Minnesota Association of Education, Young Children and Minnesota School Age Care Alliance. Must emerge and just put both the names together. Okay. And that's a different, I just don't know these groups. How does your group differ from the Minnesota Child Care Association? Are they the same, some of the same people, or is it a whole different thing? Just from my own background.
We're a separate professional organization that serve members who sign up with us. There may be some overlap.
So they're two trade associations mm-hmm. of different groups.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And I can, for the Minnesota Child Care Associations, generally, Mr. Chair, it's the entire center will be a member of our organization. From MNACI and MNSACA, actual individual teachers can be members and the entire organization. So it's really about her organization is probably more the professionals in the field, in the classroom, that are actually serving the children.
And so you have all the rule threes. Is that what your group is?
We have all, MCCA is all Rule 3 centers, correct? But MNACI and MNSACA could be Rule 2, could be Rule 3, it could be school-age programs.
Yeah.
So they have a wider range.
Well, that's helpful. So. Kind of out of touch with that committee. So, Representative Slawick, I knew you'd be asking a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate this. So, you know, back in the old days when I was chair of the Early Childhood Committee, this was a big issue. And so it's interesting to see how it came forward, Representative Pepin, and just to see, yes, there are a couple of bills on this, and there were bills on this back when I was chair, and we haven't been able to come to a good meeting of the minds. So I think when... we have testifiers talking about working on this. It may take as much work as into the interim. Some of the issues, and I just want to articulate a few of them. I mean, and ask you some questions, is in your bill, you cross out, we call it MNACI. So, and I used to be on the MNACI board, just for full disclosure. You know, and it is nationally AC, and then you get each state with the, like, AZACI would be Arizona, and you could do the initials before it. Would it be AZACI? I don't know. That's an example.
I would just say the Iowa one, then.
IAC? We could go through all the state, Alabama, LAC. But it's nationally known as the truly, like, gold standard of accrediting for child care. especially for child care centers, some of the things it can be, when you're MNACI accredited, it can be kind of expensive to go through that process, and we could ask how much, but it can be a couple thousand dollars is my understanding. So there's some issues around that, but it really is the best organization for that. And when you move into, in your bill, crossing that out and then putting in an education accrediting organization that has been accrediting in the state of Minnesota for at least 10 years or is recognized by the Department of Health and Human Services or Education, the issue there, as I see it, Representative Pepin, is you can say, sure, you've been accrediting in the state of Minnesota, but what are your standards? It's kind of like K-12 education, how we have, you know, we always have these big standards fights in K-12 and what are the standards. That's really what the question is here, is what are the right standards or acceptable standards for child care? And in this case, they're getting this 15% differential, so they're getting a higher pay rate for being accredited, and what that means is that they're offering a higher quality program, which means that kids are higher or more prepared for school. And so that's also health standards and all those types of things. But it's just setting the standards. So the issue is, where do you set the standards? With your first group, which was advanced ed, is we've had some conversations with you. We have one of the legislators that is on your board now, or was on your board, from our side of the aisle. And there's concerns about, is advanced ed and MNACI at the same level? Are they at different levels, or is one at a higher level, or where do they go? And there are some concerns that and I think we've talked about this, that the advanced ed ones are different enough from the MNACI ones, is we're not sure. And so how do you set who gets in and who doesn't get in, and where that bar should be set? So, Representative Pepin, when you said you would just accept accrediting organizations, I mean, some of the people that came to me, I don't know if they came to you, there's lots of religious organizations that accredit. There's sort of Christian school associations that accredit. I mean, there's lists and lists and lists of accrediting organizations. So what standards do you see when you put in this language? You just accept anybody that would accredit, or would you cut it off at a certain standard, or how would you do that?
Well, Representative Pepin.
Thank you. Representative Slawick. Well, as we said in the beginning, we're certainly interested in working with all the key players to discuss those standards language. The reason I brought this forward was because I think we have a problem when we list certain organizations at the exclusion of others, that we're missing some high-quality accreditors. And I think that can have an impact, frankly. It can have an impact on low-income people, for example, of having choice. Maybe they don't have appropriate facilities in their area. So what I'm trying to do is, I guess, not box certain ones out that may indeed be high quality, because as several of the witnesses have talked about, this is a snapshot in time when this passed, and things change. And so the goal isn't to necessarily pass this word for word as is. The goal is to get the interested parties on board who have a lot of experience in this area and create some standards, which we will work on, since the bill is being laid over, we'll work on in the next few weeks, months here before the omnibus bill comes forward, and try to come up with the appropriate language that meets both your concerns and my concerns.
Mr. Chair, and that's good to hear, because that's what we're trying to do as well. Now, the biggest issue, though, is as you know, there's a fiscal note on this, and when you are looking at a 15% differential, which the accredited folks get, then when you add, and this was always our biggest barrier, so when you add more people in or you open it up, then you have more people applying for that. So it looks like it's, $78,000 in fiscal year 13, and then it goes up to $441,000 in fiscal year 14 for over $500,000 in fiscal year 15. So do you, Representative Pepin, how would you deal with the fiscal note and the fact that when you open up the statute, then it becomes uncertain how many more providers, how many people are going to apply for that differential, and that's what drives the cost. Have you had a chance to review the fiscal note?
No,
Representative Pepin.
Representative Slawick, actually, I just got the fiscal note, so I haven't had much of a chance to review it. I mean, my hope is that we will have more time to dig in this before the omnibus bill comes forward, because that's certainly an issue. But I mean, again, my concern to reiterate, is just that we're boxing out high-quality accreditors. And I don't think it's our job as legislators to pick winners and losers. Of course, there needs to be standards, but I think it's very wrong of us to pick certain businesses that get this and certain businesses that don't if they're all high-quality accreditors. And so that's what I'm trying to get at.
Representative
Slough. Mr. Chair, just to say, and then I know other people have questions, but is... It's again like K-12 standards. So, I understand your point of is it wrong to box out high quality accreditors? But the point is like where's the line in the sand that you draw? So if it's on academic standards or if it's on social emotional development or where do you draw those lines and are folks meeting them? And I think what we found is that was the challenge and who makes those decisions. And as you get into this, I hope you will study, you know, nationally what's happening and how it is handled. Because if you, the more you let in, the more it's going to cost. And also, are you absolutely sure they're at that high standard? The other thing you could do is just not have the 15% differential. You know, you could just not reward people. But the idea is... then you are sending kids to a higher quality place, and so that's why the state wants it. So it's all right. How do you incent quality, but where do you draw the line?
Maybe I'll have the department come down. There's other questioners, I think, that I would like to engage them in this discussion. I don't know who is from the department that this is their topic. There's room at the table there. Welcome. And Representative Slavik, do you have more questions?
Well, I think
we have time. I just
if the department could briefly tell the history of why those people were included, because it is it is interesting to see Ms. Orr why, or if you could explain. And I've heard this a while ago, but why only certain people were named in the statute?
Representative Slavik, we did allow ample time for discussion today by comparison, so we can go. Relatively lengthy on this. So, Ms. Orr, welcome to the committee, and thanks for joining the discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, my name is Mary Orr. I'm Director of Community Partnerships and Child Care Services at the Department of Human Services. And the original statute, I think, went into place in the mid-2000s, probably 2006. I don't have the exact year. But when it was originally put in statute, it did name certain organizations. And actually, the department didn't have any input into the named organizations at that point. It was proposed legislation. And so, you know, I think some of the testifiers today have indicated that by naming organizations may not be the best way to go in the long run, and that it would be helpful to have some criteria to be using. So the question is, as Senator Representative Slavik was raising, is where to set those thresholds. The department has begun taking a look at some of this and figuring out, trying to figure out what are some of the best ways to set some of those criteria, developing criteria for measuring quality that supports school readiness and healthy development. But this work is a work that we've been planning to do over the interim in preparation for bringing recommendations perhaps for next year.
Hey, Representative Pepin, do you want to? Okay, Representative Slavik.
Mr. Chair, I would just say that I hope, I mean, and Representative Pepin, I know you want to get something through this session, but if you're willing to, you know how we like studies here at the legislature, but if there was to get the department's recommendation, either to speed it up or to do it over the interim, but it would be helpful to have those because there's different ways you can structure this, and it's a really, it's actually a pretty difficult situation or it's a difficult problem because there's only so much money. That's really what limits us always.
And Mr. Chair and members too, I think what we found from past years when there's been interest in looking at this legislation and changing either the way the legislation's written altogether or adding certain accrediting organizations, that every time we make a move, it does result in a fiscal impact of some sort. And so being this is more or less a non-budget year, that's another reason why this change as proposed in 2097 does have the fiscal impact.
Mr. Bergman, did you want to, look like you wanted to say something to this point, that since you're there, I'm trying to be fair. And we have other questioners, but
sure.
We have time.
We have, in preparation for the consideration of this bill, we have already begun discussions with I think it's the organizations behind me, about what those common standards would look like for the early learning centers. And, you know, our belief is that you could lay out a outline of what those standards would look like, but you also don't want to be too prescriptive within your statute as to what those standards. So there's a basic common theme that almost all the high-quality early learning accreditors apply to. And so we're looking to create those themes, and then you would reference those themes within the statute. And so we're working on that language right now to go ahead and address your concerns, obviously.
And Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Slawik, I think you asked a question specifically to me about a study. And I think that we do have some time to look at this, and we are in discussions. And, you know, I think that this is important enough that we should try to get it done this session, if at all possible. And just to illustrate that point, I don't have this person on the list, but one of the child care centers that is in my community, and I think might be in your community as well, Primrose, is here to testify, and that's a rather large child care center, and I think would be one of the organizations that would be a good candidate to be included in the list if we were to have a list. So would it be okay, Mr. Chair, if we had a few brief words just to talk about one of the organizations that are currently boxed out?
Yes, I'm just leaving you behind waiting with your question, or do you want to ask your question to the folks? I just have two questioners lined up, so there's time to have your testimony. So Representative Liebling, I'll just, okay. Representative Laughlin, do you want to wait? Okay. Why don't you have him come up?
I'm going to have Mr. Joe Paquette, who runs Primrose in my community, Maple Grove.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Paquette.
My name is Joe Paquette. I'm the owner of the Primrose School of Maple Grove and also currently constructing a second one up in Brooklyn Park.
Would you mind just spelling your last name so we can get it right in a minute?
Yep, P-I-K-E-T.
Thank you very much.
It's a common question. So. As Representative Pepin was stating, we run an early childhood center and child care. And Primrose is a franchise organization that has a strong emphasis on early childhood learning, early childhood development. We have chosen the Advanced Ed accreditation as the accreditation that best represents our philosophy and also what we feel is the best opportunity for children to not only grow and thrive, but also to get ready to go to school. So that's really the biggest reason that we chose that particular accreditation, and that's why we're kind of here today, is that when we went to try to get our accreditation recognized as high quality, we ran into some roadblocks with the law, the way it was written. And as I, and actually one of my fellow franchise owners kind of led the charge initially, we found out it was very difficult to try to get a new accreditation recognized. There was really no other way to do it other than get yours named in statute, and that became a very cumbersome process, hard for an individual small business owner like myself to try to do something good for my business when you have to go through a political process, essentially, to try to get your name recognized. And we are already overseen by the Department of Human Services and feel that they've got some ability to be able to, you know, help us with finding those accreditations, and we would be fine working through that process as opposed to a legislative process. So that's really kind of why I'm sitting here today.
I appreciate that. Ms. Pinelli, Representative Atkins has a bill. Is it the same as this bill, or is it different? Do you know?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, I believe Representative Atkins does have a bill. The wording of it is slightly different than this. I think it might just add another accreditation organization, a named organization, to the list.
Okay, and Representative Franzen has a bill on this. Is it similar to this one?
Yep.
Okay. I'm just kind of a bipartisan problem.
Yeah. Mine adds just advanced.
Oh, you add a name. Okay. I got it. Anyway, so I'm just kind of new to this topic. Ms. Orr, would you mind coming back? I have a question, then I'll yield to our questioners here. And I think there is time to get to a resolution if people are interested in finding something, and then it becomes a question of money. But I think you haven't got the policy question solved. And the money seems to drive the policy because we just can't do any because there's not money to add to it. That's just my editorial. Ms. Orr, on the language that's there, it's an or. They've been here 10 years or they're approved by you or the education people. Does this company, I mean, a lot of places you would not approve? If the language were, if they would take out the 10-year thing, Would most of the people that want to be approved anyway?
Mr. Chair, it's basically the way the language is drafted right now, it leaves to the state agencies complete freedom as far as who they want to recognize or not. So, it, you know, I think it's difficult to say at this point. I mean, we would need to, I think just to implement it, we would have to develop some sort of threshold because you're going to own, if this language were to pass, you would appropriate a certain amount of money in order to implement it. And so we would probably be confined by the appropriation in some ways in order to determine how many we can recognize.
I didn't ask my question very well. Let me try a different way. If it were up to you, some of the people that are accredited that would do accrediting are probably pretty good companies, and you would find them to be as credible as whoever else the rest of these people are, compared to me being the accrediting agency. I would not qualify under any criteria you could set up. And there's probably some that are, they want to be accrediting agencies, but they're really not so good. But is there some of the ones, this, I don't know anything about advanced ed, and but that's a, seems like it's a pretty realistic company, and they, people seem to like them, and they accredit this fine group here. And so just as I help you move this forward, sometimes this fuzziness about 10 years or might be a problem. But if you would you would set up some, I think though you'll get some criteria by the time March is done. And if there were criteria, a lot of people would qualify as being good if they had a chance to get in the door. Is that probably true?
Mr. Chair, I don't know enough about the universe out there of possible organizations that might come forward to be able to answer that question.
I think I'll stop asking my question. Representative Liebling, you actually signed up on the list. So I'll quit jumping ahead of you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And when I first raised my hand, I had some questions that I think kind of got answered in part by Representative Slawick, but you know, I appreciate that you're trying to explore this because this is also something that is not my, certainly not my area, and I want to understand what's going on here because, I mean, after all, this is about how well our kids get cared for, but it's also about where our budget gets spent. And I'm looking at the fiscal note, and I know Representative Pepin said she hasn't really had much of a chance to see it, but you know, clearly, though, even without a fiscal note, we would know that the result of this would be to accredit more centers, which would mean to pay higher rates in more places with our child care assistance funds. And so I just want to kind of bring up, there's a bit of an irony here because we just went through a big kind of contentious hearing about whether providers could have their union dues taken out of their child care assistance funds, and a lot of people were very up in arms about that, about how that was going to use those child care funds that were there for the kids and so on. And now we're talking about without any more money and having cut our child care assistance funds, paying more per kid to more centers, which obviously, whatever the number would actually be, it means that fewer kids can get the care at all. And, you know, it's, boy, it's, I think it's a really a tough balancing act between paying enough to get quality and paying for a lot of kids. But I just really wanted to point that out. This fiscal note says that in if we did this, it, and I know, obviously, I haven't really looked at it that closely either, had a chance to really read it, but, you know, half a million extra dollars in fiscal year 15 for basically the same number of kids, you know, I frankly, at this point, I'd rather get more families covered rather than, you know, spend the money to accredit more places under different accrediting agencies. So I just thought that that should be brought up in the mix of things that we're talking about today.
I think it's a valuable point of view. Do you want to react, Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Slawick, or Representative Liebling. Sorry, I guess it was in my vernacular already. I would say that you know, lower income people under current statute have fewer choices, and the idea is this would open up more choices for those people in particular. So I would disagree with that comment. And obviously we'll have to look more at the fiscal note. But I would challenge all of you to determine what your job is as a legislator. Is it your job to determine which of your child care organizations should be winners and which ones should be losers? Is that our job as a legislature to do that? And I would challenge you that it is not. It is not our job to pick which of our child care organizations should be chosen to get this and which should not. I think there should be accrediting organizations that are qualified to do that. I appreciate that, but for us to basically box people out from having this opportunity, I don't think is right. And I would challenge all of you to think if you feel it is your job to pick winners and losers. I do not feel it's my job to pick which child care centers win and which ones lose.
I kind of get that, too. It seems like, I don't know anything about Primrose, it seems like both you like it, and I presume Leprislavic likes the one in her district. I've never been to one, so. But it seems like if you're doing the same thing that somebody else is doing it that gets an enhanced rate, and you're spending all the money that they're spending to have that level of quality, that's the unfairness you're trying to address. And that's the same thing in a lot of our rate setting in our human service budget elsewhere, that there's a great rate disparity based upon historic crazy things from 15 years ago. So I think I'm understanding the issue. Representative Liebling, you can follow up.
Thank you, yeah, Mr. Chair. If I could just follow up with that.
Yeah, by all means.
You know, first of all, I have to say, if you don't like picking winners and losers, I mean, none of us do, but that's kind of our job here. And I have to say, I'm not so concerned about, you know, it's one thing the people who are providing the care do right now have the option to get accreditation from one of these agencies that is providing it. Yeah. So I suppose they do have the choice to go and find to pick one of these. The people that are not getting the options are the agencies, it sounds like to me. But be that as it may, I'm more concerned about the kids and the families and those that can't get. The list is short. I mean, the list is long. The money is short. And the families that can't get any help don't have any choice at all. Those are the people whose choices I'm worried about. And, you know, obviously when we cap the money at a certain level, we're picking winners and losers, in a sense. And this is something that we have in healthcare all the time. You know, some people want insurance companies to have all the options. And others of us feel that, you know, people who don't have insurance at all are not exactly getting an option. So, you know, this is just something we face all the time. I don't think we're boxing out any providers here. I think that if anybody's being boxed out, it's the accrediting agencies. And, you know, I don't know enough about it to say that some are better than others. I think Representative Slawick and, you know, the discussion about finding a more rational way to pick them is fine. I have no problem with that. I just think that you know, again, I think we're worried here about my focus would be on the kids and on the families, and are we giving them choices and options? And when we use the money, pay more of it out and raise the payments for an individual child as opposed to, you know, getting more people on the list, we're picking winners and losers right there.
Well, I think the follow-up question to that is, Mr. Pickett, why did you pick this company and not the other ones? That would probably be a salient question. I did jump ahead of two others.
Yeah, and we are boxed out in essence because we have picked Advanced Ed.
Why didn't you pick one of these? Did you choose not to? Were they harder, or did they didn't want to talk to you?
We felt, as Primrose Schools, that Advanced Ed represented the best accreditation for our model that we run in our schools. It has a focus not only on health and safety, but it also has a strong focus on the educational school readiness side, which is kind of what our vision is as far as where we play in that market space. So Advanced Ed was our best representation, and we felt of all the ones that we could look at and choose from, that they were the ones that were best for us and that they represented the highest quality. Again, no undue disrespect to any of the other accreditations, but they didn't fit our model as well as Advanced Ed did. And our business model has been very successful. I mean, Primrose Schools do very well across the country with getting kids ready for school. We have high parent satisfaction, and we have high results in the schools.
Thanks. And I better go to my list, or I'll be doing a bad job. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, I actually would love to see a lot more investment in this area because I do believe that quality early childhood education and early childhood care really does make a difference in all kinds of our budgets, not just in this committee, but in the education committee and elsewhere. And So I'm not afraid of spending more money for quality care, but I am concerned about not having it based on standards that are really set objectively based on research, not based on what particular franchise you decide to affiliate with, and that it gives equal opportunity to a small family center or program that's run by someone who has maybe even a master's in early childhood but decided they don't want to spend the money on a franchise fee but has an equal chance to have their program accredited and get the extra money because they're delivering that kind of a product. And so to me it's about outcomes and standards and not about the alphabet soup of who invents a new accrediting group or another. I mean, it sounds like we have, you know, probably lots of them around the nation who want to say we're accrediting. And I think we ought to have Minnesota standards. But I'm concerned, Representative Pepin, about, you know, I don't think length of time should be a criteria, you know, that you've been accrediting, because it doesn't say what your standards are. But I also am concerned about the second part, which is recognized by, I'm not sure what recognized means, by any one of three state agencies. And it seems to me if we're going to move forward as a state with a really strategic effort towards moving forward on this topic, and I believe that the governor has an early childhood cabinet, or I don't know if that's the right term, but a group of coordinating efforts across the state agencies, which is part of why we were able to get the federal, you know, race to the top early childhood money, that we really ought to have one place and one agency and not have accreditation organization, franchisers, or centers, or home care providers shopping from one state agency to the other. We should have one Minnesota standard that's based on good evidence-based quality standards, and that we don't care who you franchise with or if you don't franchise. We're just assuring those parents and their children that we're meeting a good quality that will actually make a difference in those children's lives in terms of both their health and safety and their school readiness. So I would really like us to look at and have a discussion between Ms. Orr and the other state agencies about how we might address that as well.
Who wants to respond to that? Representative Pepin, Ms. Orr?
Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler, I think that would be fine with your first concern about the length of time. I don't think that's a problem. And then your other point is well taken as well. So we can. I'm happy to look at that.
Okay, Mr. Pickett.
Yeah, I'll just add in that we are working with the MCCA and other organizations on coming up with a list of themes or standards so that we will measure according to Minnesota standards which accreditations will fit. So that part has been undergoing already for the last week.
So, Representative Lane. And I just don't have Lane, Lomer, Slawick, and Francis, so we didn't forget you.
Last week we had a long hearing on accountability and the use of state money. And when I read this, an education accrediting organization that has been accrediting in the state of Minnesota for at least 10 years, it makes me wonder, how do you become an education accrediting organization? And because once you do that, then you simply say, yeah, I accredit you and I accredit you. You can go online and get a diploma in most anything you want by just paying for it. I could become an education, I'm wondering, could I become an education accrediting organization and start accrediting, and 10 years from now I could be the one that anoints who gets more money. Is this how we want to do it? I mean, this seems very loose to me, and I'm just wondering if it's as loose as it feels to me, because I want accountability in the use of state funds.
Who wants to say? Oh, go ahead.
Okay. The development of standards and the development of how you become a accreditation agency are two very serious issues that Advance Ed as an organization, and also know NACI and a lot of the other national accreditation agencies take very seriously. In the work that we do, as I said, our agency has been an accreditation agency since 1895. NCA CASI was founded as one of the initial six regional accreditation agencies in the United States. Our standards are all research-based. They're designed and developed through early learning standards. Were vetted through early learning specialists. They were designed to meet both a health and safety and also an educational aspect. Those would be the types of high quality that you're looking for. the concept that there are diploma mills out there is the exact reason why there needs to be quality accreditation and why you do need to ask and demand that there be high standards. Because when you receive a diploma that has been approved or it's from an agency that school or institution that is recognized by NCA CASI, you know that they have met research-based quality standards that have proven to be the standard by which our educational institutions should be judged. So the standards that we bring to early learning are on par with NACE, they're on par with NECPA, they're on par with the other agencies. And we also applaud their standards as well. There are themes, and in a lot of other states what they do is, you know, NACE has been brought up here as the gold standard. In a lot of other states, they use that as the gold standard by which you would crosswalk your standard. So what we're going to attempt to do is sort of crosswalk where these leaders of standards are to go ahead and give you an idea of what those basic themes are that you would want to look for from an accreditation agency.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely. And the question for Representative Pepin, is that what this sentence, this phrase says? An education accrediting organization that's been accrediting. How does that say standards?
Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lane. Well, I've mentioned a couple times, probably I'd say four or five times, that we're going to continue to look at standards. We understand that that's an issue. We're working with the appropriate interested parties, and I understand fully that that is something that needs to be discussed further.
And I want to commend you, Mr. Bergman, for using more acronyms than I recognize in one sentence, so thank you. All the time. I was only on the committee even when I was a freshman. That was 12 years ago, so I'm a little rusty. Representative Lomer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to weigh in on this conversation. Especially after hearing what Representative Pepin said, you know, we as a state are picking winners and losers for these families. And, you know, where is the decision for the family? I mean, I think if a family wants to put their child in daycare, they're spending a lot of time and they're evaluating this program and they're saying, you know, this is where I want my child. And I think that the parents should be able to have this choice. And I noticed that Tanya Holt from Primrose is up in the audience. Last year, Representative Franson and I went to a Primrose school and looked at it. It is an exceptional preschool. I was so very impressed with it. And it just didn't make sense to me why we would not allow a family on subsidy to be able to go to that school. And so I just wanted to weigh in on that. I really don't have a question, but I just agree. Thank you.
I think they can go. They just won't get the enhanced rate. That's the difference. I think that's what the bill is about. And so, but it may limit, I don't know, is there, I'll stop. Representative Slawick, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Actually, I'm glad the bill's in this committee because you're here and you've had a lot of discussions about it. I think this is a pretty well-suited committee for this discussion. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just so happy we're spending time in child care because I remember last time
we didn't spend the whole hour already. So.
Nice to have a couple minutes. Yes, and Tanya is here, and Primrose is a great place, but this is not about whether a place is great or not. It's about accrediting and standards, and we do pick winners and losers all the time. I mean, there's bills in here all the time when we're doing that. I did have a question. I thought that the MCCA, the Minnesota, I think it's the Community Ed Association, had crosswalks. Somebody has crosswalked Manasi and the Advanced Ed, and they weren't on the same level. Is that not true?
Booth can answer.
Yeah, I don't know if they have crosswalked our current early learning standards. I think they crosswalked it with our previous K-12 standards, but we do have much more specific early learning standards that crosswalk with the move is to go ahead and add a much more compliance-driven model, which is something that some of the accreditation agencies have had a longer history of than we have. So we have added the compliance-driven model as well to meet the MCCA crosswalk that was previously looked at. So, but they have not done it on our new early learning standards.
Slavik. Yeah.
So that would be, I mean, that would be very helpful if we had the apples to apples, because that's what I was told, is that it wasn't apples to apples and the quality wasn't the same and the crosswalking didn't match up. And to me, of course, I don't understand all of that and exactly what the differences were, but we were told that the quality levels were different. And for the owner of the Primrose, can you tell me how many CCAP kids you currently serve?
Right now I have two.
Two out of how many students?
I have 170 enrolled students.
So, Mr. Chair, so you have two out of 170 students. Can you tell me about what the average it costs to pay for an infant for a week or a month or however you do it?
Mr. Yep. Pickett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we maintain a smaller ratio, smaller group sizes, so our rates are a little bit higher. They're at $350 a week for an infant.
$350 a week. Yep. So that would be $700 for 2 weeks, so about $1,400 a month for child care for an infant.
That is correct.
And, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can you tell? So are you kind of in the higher end of the child care market? Can you tell us?
Yep. Our rates, and they could vary by franchise, so I'm only speaking for my franchise, but we're typically about 15 to 10% higher than a lot of our mid-level competitors. But we also feel that we have the higher value and that we offer a stronger program. And again, feel that our accreditation speaks to that. So,
Representative Slavik.
So, just to take, I'm just very, very practical here, just like everybody else is. So, you have two CCAP students. You charge 10 to 15% above the average. I know you're located in very wealthy areas like Woodbury, which I'm now going to represent part of. I think.
Yeah, sure.
we'll see. I represented part of before, let's put it that way. And so we'll be back there. And so what's your market for CCAT kids? I mean, it's just, there's sort of this disconnect of you're in sort of wealthier areas. Are there lots of CCAP kids in areas like Woodbury?
We do. I do get CCAP kids. And at this time, a lot of CCAP kids can't attend. If they got the differential, that might make the difference to allow them. We have the parents that, and I've been up to six to seven of them at a time, and they typically have the families that are making an additional sacrifice to get their kids into a higher quality center like ours. So the moms or the grandparents or others who might be payers are working harder to try to make sure that their kids can attend our center. And, you know, they've made a choice that they think this our center is going to do the best job of getting their kids prepared for school and giving them the best shot as they grow up.
So the only other thing I try to understand is this whole market rate survey stuff of how CCAP, how much would CCAP pay a week versus what a private pay child would pay?
Mr. Pickett.
That could vary by program. I don't have those numbers off the top of my head because we have obviously different age groups have different rates and the reimbursements are different depending on the rates, the age of the child. So.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
But it would be quite a bit lower, right, wouldn't it?
Well, they will not be able to cover our entire tuition with the CCAP payment, if you're asking. But every little bit they can get does help them. And it could be the tipping point for some families to be able to attend.
Mr. Pickett, just to help me, and then we'll go back. So if you chose, you could waive the difference between your retail price and what CCAP pays. That's your choice? And you could
we do have that choice.
Okay, thank you. Representative Slavik.
Yeah, that's kind of, so I think of, okay, so low-income family. Mom's going to work. She's transitioning off welfare off work. She's got a job that's probably not all that high paid. They're paying $350 a week for infant care, so that'd be the $700, the $1,400 a month. Her paycheck is probably may not be much more than that. And so it's just trying to figure out how it all fits together. But we should probably get back to the issue of. The main concern here would be the quality and is where the accreditation is and what the standards are. But it does play into also the child care places and where CCAP kids are. And I don't, you know, the department, I don't know exactly where they are, but it does, you know, a CCAP kid, why our state pays for a child to get child care assistance is because that family is transitioning and going back to work. Mom is going back. We're trying to get mom into a high-paying job so mom can keep working and sustain the family and get off government assistance. So that's the why we even do this. And the accreditation, the 15% differential, is specifically about getting that kid a good quality education. There's no question, you know, I think Primrose can do that. it just is, which accreditation do you go with? Do you go with Advanced Ed, or do you go with MNASI, or do you go with these? And then how, as a state, do we measure those? And these are, in, if you are on K-12, Mr. Chair, this is like what the K-12 committee does. But they do it ad nauseum on different, you know, for committee. Different classes. So it does matter. And I just hope that we can see here, there's a, as always with the legislature, there's also a variety of interests here and a variety of what we're trying to do. But I hope we're doing the right thing for kids, as many of my colleagues here have said, and really trying to help families, and to whatever we decide to do on this, that we're making sure we have that quality in place. And at the same time, you know, it's a access issue. So we're going to have less access and less kids served because we're giving a potentially a provider rate differential. I mean, one of my colleagues, actually our brilliant researcher here, brought up, slid across a note to the table, what if you just dropped it to 5%? So, right, so you don't do a 15% accreditation differential, you do a 5%, right? So you bring the rate down, and then you've got maybe your pool of money. I mean, I thought that was actually pretty smart. I don't know how much money that actually is, but Representative Pepin, would you consider something like that, bring the money down so they don't get as much, but you might be able to keep within your fiscal parameters?
Mr. Chair and Representative Slawick, at this time we're in all sorts of discussions, so we're open to looking at that or anything else.
Mr. Chair, something to think about, just as a way you could keep up the, but will it make a difference to providers then if they're only getting a small reimbursement rate? Does it then become worth it to you to do that? Would you, Mr.
Pickett, then, Ms. Orr, I have a question for you. So, Mr. Pickett, you can respond, and maybe Ms. Orr, you can come down.
To answer your question, I mean, I work hard when I talk to CCAP families about trying to find a way to get them in my center, because I'm not here for the money today. I'm here to help these kids try to get the best quality care and education that they can get at that age. We were talking a lot about our infant rates. Honestly, I don't have anybody in as an infant. Most of the time, my CCAP families are coming in when we're hitting preschool age, which is they're looking ready to go to school in about 2 years. And that's one of the stronger parts of my program, is to be able to help those kids at three. So the money is not my personal driver for asking Representative Pepin to help us out with this. It's more to try to get access and to put us on par with all the other providers who have high-quality accreditations so that we're not at a disadvantage in the marketplace. I mean, that's really the biggest reason that we're here.
Ms. Orr, I have a question. Can you tell me how much we're paying in this enhanced rate, just that the enhanced rate portion statewide? You know, it's $400,000 in the out year if we do it, but is it like $10 million or $2 million or $100 million, or just an idea?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't have that exact figure. I guess what I can let you know is that when we do pay, it's up to 15% differential over and above the maximum rate. And typically what that runs to be per, just get oriented here. The increased monthly payment amount, what that translates to be for a child is about anywhere from $85 to $95 a month. So that gives you an idea just of the amount on a monthly basis, what the difference is. And then
and what percentage of places get this accreditation? Like half of them?
Based on just some preliminary information we have, we're estimating that about 20% of children in care with child care assistance are in care with a credentialed or accredited provider. So about 20% of the
All right, that's helpful. Representative Franson, you've been waiting a long time.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm okay. I'm patient. Thank you, Representative Pepin. As last year, I had authored House File 1556 to include advanced ed as part of the accreditation process. You know, my stance has always been that parents decide the quality of child care, and that if we can open up the markets and give the parents more choices to quality child care that they define as quality, not governmental standards of quality. I think that's a really great thing, and like Representative Lomer had said, we did visit a Primrose in Woodbury last session, and Woodbury is competing with New Horizons, and New Horizons happens to be accredited. So, you know, here we are picking winners and losers where, you know, Primrose would love to be able to help the lower income families and take some of that stress and the financial burden off of their shoulders, and are unable to do that. And as some parents that really truly do want to go to Primrose because they believe that their children would excel there, have to make that financial sacrifice to or that sacrifice to their children's upbringing, their preschool training, to go to New Horizons down the road. But on top of that, you know, maybe Representative Loeffler, Lieblings, Representative Slawick, and Representative Lomer and I, and Representative Pepin, maybe we could go tour some child care facilities, those that offer different accreditations, and see exactly what it is that they have to offer and why they are so different from an advanced ed, and start making some discussions that way also. I think that would be a great trip. We could do it on a Friday and start some discussions.
Maybe start at Starbucks and kind of go off. Or another accredited franchise, Caribou or whatever. I think we've had a really good discussion. We have a little more time if you want to burn it up, but I think that this has been, it's nice we had the time. Representative Pepin, are there other questions? Representative Pepin, do you want to offer any thoughts? We've heard a lot of discussion.
Well, I just appreciate being able to offer the bill before you today, and I appreciate the discussion. Gives me some more perspective on some of the history, so I appreciate that with Representative Slawick. And, you know, again, I think that, you know, there's some discussions that need to take place before we move forward with it. But, again, I do feel strongly that it's our job not to sort of pick out private businesses as, you know, as winners and losers. And there are a lot of, as Representative Franzen pointed out so eloquently, there are communities where you have maybe two big child care centers, maybe a New Horizons, which is a great organization, and a Primrose, and it doesn't seem right to me that we should decide that we're going to exclude one of these businesses, and, you know, that's not why I'm in the legislature. Now, I realize there are times when we pick winners and losers, but still, I maintain it's not our job to pick which businesses fail and which businesses succeed, and so I just ask you to consider this, and you know, consider what it is that is our responsibility for providing choice to parents. And with that, I will be back later with more, I'm sure.
Well, it sounds like you have a lot of interest here and a lot of people who want to dig into this topic. And I suppose you have probably a month at the most, maybe sooner if we get our bill going. I don't know. We haven't got our schedule figured out yet. And hopefully then at that point it would be a consensus, or at least nearly a consensus. You have a policy problem, then you have a money problem. So, but I think the policy problem hasn't been solved yet very well, even because it's always been stopped by the money issue. We can't talk about it costs money. So then, I think it's good to bring it up again. And Representative Slawick, maybe this can get answered while you're part of not Woodbury, you know, yeah. Before that day comes. Well, this bill is held over, and thank you for all of you coming and for the good discussion.
While we're waiting for Representative Abler to get established at the testimony table, we'll take an action on the minutes, the wonderful, exciting minutes from yesterday, February 22nd, and Representative Schumacher moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. What? My goodness. We are feisty today, Representative Gutwald.
Oh, they wanted a division?
Must be the orange tie. Representative Abler, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House Bill 2230 for possible inclusion in whatever we do with it later. And I do have an amendment to get the bill in order. And I'll describe the amendment, and then I'll move it.
Thank you, Representative.
Maybe I'll just, I think I'll just move the amendment, because this is the first hearing it's had.
And Representative Abler, that's the A1 amendment?
I'll move the A1 amendment, and it's just cleaner to discuss the whole bill as a whole. So I'll move the A1 amendment and describe it later. So if you
okay,
move,
we
can vote
move
on it first just to get it squared.
Okay. Right. All right. We have a motion by Representative Abler to adopt the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails, and A1 amendment is adopted.
A lot of people like the bill better all of a sudden, Madam Chair. We took out Section 6. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what this is, we're kind of doing these, I don't know what all is going to wind up in our bill. We have no idea of the target. I have no idea of the problem we have, if we have any problem to solve officially in terms of a target. I do know we have some challenges to face from a few of the elements of last year's bills. And this is the second article, if it would be that, by topic. Last one was the healthcare article, and that was a little controversial. And I do appreciate the input of the people that were concerned about that Social Security piece. I did mean that we would work on it. And I said that yesterday, and I overstated it today. This is some leftovers ideas from last year and maybe one or two new ones, but I'll just go over it. And I'll... there's only a few sections, and I compared to last year, if you remember the healthcare sections of our bill, it was massive. And if this is a healthcare article, it's like five pages. So we kind of, the plans were saying, could you please not do much reform this time, let us catch our breath, federal health is coming, and so I think that everybody is eager for a breather, and these are all very small projects. The first one, this is the language of the last year's bill, but it doesn't really work. But there's an idea here that I want to carry forward. What I've discovered as I've been scouring every area of our budget for money that we could better spend is that in the fee-for-service area in particular, there's been a lot of unnecessary care delivered because there's no reason not to. Nobody cares. You send in a bill, they send a check. Send another bill, they send another check. And that's just... that's where we've been able to find some savings. So competitive bidding in the PMAP world got us some money because then they had to like pay more close attention. But in the non-managed side, it's just send in a bill, get a check. And so there's some very high cost kids yet in this. We discussed this last year, but how to coordinate some of these high cost kids that aren't in PMAP, that are not. And so I had a bill. So we were having nurse practitioners working at hospitals, and that became impractical. And there was no savings, and we didn't attempt to work through the bugs of it. And so I listened to all that concern, and the version that's going to come out of this is not the final version, but I'm just telling you the idea of it, is that the kids, pediatric patients who are either psychiatric primary or disability, physical ailments primary, that are above a certain threshold annually, like 50,000 or more, are just begging to be coordinated with somebody who cares. On the order of the Youth Special Kids Program, which I cited here, which it's not appropriate to use that again, but that's just how it got me thinking. Dr. Ann Kelly would take kids that cost $100,000 a year with physical issues and get them down to $8,000 a year. And actually, they were doing better on the $8,000 than they were on the $100,000. And that's just, that would be a cut, but nothing got cut. We just didn't waste. And actually, it took the $8,000 to a better use. The idea of this is the kids who are not in a PMAP program, who are not being covered in a children's or Gillette-like program, where they already do the coordination built in, would somehow be coordinated, either by the state or by an RFP to hire a children's-like program or somebody who can do this, maybe even virtually, or get them in a healthcare home where they would be part of that, so there would be some knowledge of this child when they have their event on vacation in some distant town. They don't have to go to the hospital and ruin the vacation. They go to the hospital, spend 4 hours, spend $8,000 to accomplish nothing. And that's the idea of this. And I'm working with the Department on Language. I hope it has a savings to it. But that's the idea of this. And so some of the people were concerned about all the words in here. And so that's the idea of it. And it's nice we have some time. I'm compared to last year when there was no time and only a crisis. We now have time to luxuriously let this language get worked on for a period of a week or two, which is how I really prefer to do business. So that's the first one. The second one is not even just one of the, here it is again. This is an oldie goodie, almost the best of. This is any willing provider in a HMO, which the HMOs, or if they come down, or they didn't testify, but you just know they don't like it. But the problem is that many clinicians have not had the privilege of becoming part of they're not part of a group, and there's no need, according to the network needs. They still pay the provider tax, and they get nothing to show for it. People want to see them. They're right next to their house, but they can't go to this clinic. They have to go to some other one. And it just seems fair to me that if you are licensed and agree to comply with all the rules that are set up by the HMO, you should be allowed to be a provider in those networks. This is a little controversial, but I think it was in the bill last year that passed the floor. So there was a House position on this, and it didn't get much passed. The governor didn't agree with this either last year, but maybe he'll have a change of heart. So that's that one. The next one is, there's two here that I'm using as new quality indicators. One of the problems with provider peer grouping was they didn't have enough things of quality to measure. And in competitive bidding, some people were concerned about the process. So I'm offering two new quality measures. One is how they use patient-centered decision-making in their work. And I've been more specific in the past about that, which doesn't work. I ran against that wall. So I figured if the plans could incorporate into their operations this patient-centered decision-making, which you probably all heard the presentation on by Dr. Woods, which is fascinating and really relevant to get better care even at, and it turns into a savings because they don't pick the most expensive bad idea. They do a safer, more conservative version sometimes. So we'll judge the plans about how they're incorporating that. And the second way, an idea that I credit to Epson Huntley, which we've gotten no mileage on at all yet. We're at a meeting, I think, of social workers or somebody, you and I, maybe community health clinics, that's what it was. And you mentioned that how sad it is that there's a hospital and across the street is a low birth weight baby growing and going to be born too early, and it's too bad they couldn't hook it up. And the hospitals didn't really want to be responsible for doing that because some did and some didn't. But I wanted to make it a strategy that we'd have the health plans coordinate and we would judge them on how they're doing on that. So they could coerce their hospitals and their clinics to go work on this. So these become quality measures. And if it needs to be cleared up to say that, these are meant to be just ways the department would judge. And I think if you make it an outcome measure that everybody would like to do these things, so now we'll actually see them fleshed out in real life. The Section 5, it just came to my attention that the competitive bidding that we took $175 million in savings for was in session law. And so I have to tell my Scott Lights joke. We were in my office, and he says, "What's this in the bill?" I said, "Well, it's the governor's executive order in language." And so they actually have an amendment to their own language. They want to clean it up a little bit. But this is simply the governor's executive order requiring competitive bidding. We codified it, but it was in session law. This is now in a permanent status. We weren't clear if the tails included this or not. And there was tail savings in the healthcare side for the caps on the rates. But if indeed this was going to expire and they couldn't have used it, then maybe I'm arguing there might be some savings in this that we could extract, since they'll have to be competitive bidding still, but under a cap. So maybe if the two best bidders are 0.25% below the cap, then I can take that and solve some of our problems that we have here. Number 6 is a great section, but I took it out because it wasn't ready for prime time again. So, and it makes the bill a little shorter, and so we're trying to save paper. And number 7, the last one, is I've been working on this for 4 years, and I still like the idea, and I think the department finally understands what I want to do. There is a mountain of data sitting at DHS that resembles, I think, my CD collection, and it's just stacked up collecting CD collection, and it's just stacked up collecting dust, although I do actually use CDs, and I don't know how to put them into my little eye thing. So I like this. Putting the clicker thing and it plays music. But I'd like to do the same thing with this data and actually get some use out of it. And the question is, how do you safely and appropriately look at this, I don't know, bazillions of points of data that we could judge? When I asked the department in last year's bill that we're not going to pay for the same test given twice in a month, an MRI here, an MRI there, they said, we don't know how to do that. And I thought that was an easy one. And so if they don't know how to, and this is no disrespect, they're using COBOL and abacuses, I think, in some of their work. But I'd like to know, if we give care to a group of individuals, does it change how much care they use? And if we have some kind of care to use more and some less, what are the outcomes on it? And the data is there to do this, and they have it all sitting on those CDs in somebody's office. And so without getting into any data issues about releasing data to go to some foreign, you know, some outside place, is there a way they could bring people into their offices, be it the Mayo or Northwestern Health Sciences or the U or whoever would like to study some of these items and find the value of all the money we're spending? And it's more than the $3.9 billion. It's probably $6 billion a year, I would suppose, in joint costs that we're spending. And we don't know what we're getting for it. So that's the idea of this. And it's simply to ask them to bring us how they would let that be done. And it seems to me that maybe some of these nonprofits would actually find that kind of interesting to know themselves, and they might even pay for it. Under the careful eyes of, we thought we might assign Dr. Golden to this to make sure it's all secure. He loves data anyway, so, and I wanted to work his name into my sentence. So that's the bill, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Abler. And I do have a question for you as well, and this is based on your Section 6. And one, there was an experience recently with someone where evidence-based medicine was used on a medical decision, and I noticed here part of this was surgical procedures for abnormal uterine bleeding, but in this case it was a cholecystectomy done laparoscopically, and there was a bleeding issue later on. And it was interesting when she told me that the resident surgeon came in, and normally they would have done a second surgery when she was rushed back to the hospital for whatever, and hemoglobin even dropped as low as 6%. And so it was a pretty interesting situation, and because she was concerned and all that, but they use the phrase evidence-based medicine to say the statistics we have shown in the patient-centered decision-making, it was evidence-based, and said, you know, evidence-based statistics show that this, that going back in can, and just gave a bunch of other information to this patient. But it was based upon that, and they did hold tight, and she did recover, and they didn't do another surgery. And they did some blood transfusions, but other than that, and it was really a tough situation for the family to go through that. But because the physician was able to use evidence-based and to do that, was significant difference. And I noticed here you have patient-centered, but I think patient-centered decisions are also really constructively helped with that. And I know we've kind of used those phrases before, and I know you don't mean to exclude anything whatsoever. But if it might be possible to include that, I don't think you would see that as a contradiction, I don't believe. Representative Abel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, Section 6 was deleted from the bill. So we kept Section 5, oh. I think.
Well, I like that section, Representative Abler.
Oh, that's well, no, I liked it, too, but it just it has too many implementing problems. And so I'm settling for more voluntary use of the same idea. But the idea of patient-centered decision-making is a bit different than a panel deciding some evidence or the insurance company won't pay because there's no evidence. This is where the doctor sits down with the patient and says, you got 16 choices. You can do this and this and this. You might die from this one. You will die if you don't do this one. But these three in the middle, are you're going to get to keep most of your parts, and you might like that better. And then we'll try something a little later. And then they can kind of select and be part of the team. And it's especially useful, and I exaggerate, and not to be facetious. These are grave decisions sometimes. But it's useful to bring the patient and their family into understanding a lot of the choices that are going through the doctor's head. And then they kind of share the outcome. And I think it wasn't meant to be this, but I think it's a way to reduce lawsuits and a bad outcome because the people chose than to go at it the more dangerous way or to wait and not do something. Mm-hmm. And I think whenever you get people and doctors talking in a way that is really where it's centered around what's best for the patient, and it's a respectful dialogue, it's better. That's what we're trying to push for, and, mm-hmm. and that's Dr. Wood's talk, which I... He says it longer than that, but I've heard it enough times. I think that's a pretty good summary of it. So that's my answer.
Thank you, Representative Avalor. And I think whether it was Section 6, I happen to have just taken it from that, or the additional information, I just wanted to give an example of that this can really work, patient-centered decisions-making and all of that. And there was a savings to this insurance company. It was a good outcome. And that I was just trying to give you an example to support it.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. We do have Representative Liebling. We do have two testifiers as well, Kelly Wolf and Twyla Braze. And so, Representative Liebling, if you would like to ask your question before the testifiers.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I just wanted to be part of this little conversation that you're having here, which is so interesting. And, you know, Dr. Wood, of course, is from Mayo, and that, you know, Mayo does this all the time. I think part of the reason, actually, is that the docs are all on salary. They don't have to, you know, they all have an interest in, they're not earning their money piecemeal by procedures or something like that. But I just kind of wanted to point out that this idea of having the doctor actually talk through with the patient all of the options so the patient can make really informed decisions, it's a great thing, and the part of the problem that we have getting to that often is that the physician's time is not paid for to do that. Physicians often are paid to do stuff, not to sit and talk about stuff. So, you know, if we wanted to pay physicians to have these conversations, I think that would be an excellent idea, and in fact, that's something that the Affordable Care Act tried to do. However, that was given a name that made it impossible to do. And the name that it was given by the opponents of the bill was death panels. So when people referred to death panels and went out telling people that death panels were in the Affordable Care Act, they were talking about paying physicians to have these conversations with their patients so their patients could make decisions, because often the decision the patient will make is for a less invasive procedure. Often if they understand whether there's actual research behind a procedure, or they will make a decision that can be less expensive, but it should be their decision.
Thank you, Representative Levy.
It's just good to have you here, you know? We're uniting each other, and just I feel the love here. But actually, just to agree with you to the highest extent I can, it may actually be in the health plan's interest, since I'm putting it back on the health plan mm-hmm. and the people that are getting the money to be tested on this. I think that if they save some of these procedures, they actually could make in their own system a way to reward doctors for not doing anything on some people. Because then they can create it within their own payment model, which may get us both where we want to get to. So thank you for helping.
Thank you, Representative Abler. I think that's exactly right on. Okay, we do have another question. Representative Franson, can we have the testifiers? Okay, all right. Okay, our first testifier is Kelly Wolf. And if you would state your name and spell it for the tape, would you?
Absolutely. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kelly Wolf, KellyWolfe. And I am here with Children's Hospitals and Clinics of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to say a few words. I'm going to be speaking specifically to Section 1 of the bill. Children's is a strong believer in care coordination and building partnerships among the child, family, and primary care practice to create centralized medical care. For that reason, Children's was a leader in the state in establishing a medical home model to coordinate care for our special high-needs patients. We launched our medical home program in 2005, and in the initial first 2 years, we reduced our outpatient clinic visits by more than half and our inpatient clinic visits by 60%. Since then, we've seen over 1,000 patients and saw a $2 million reduction in the cost of hospitalizations and ED visits in 2011 alone. We've also implemented programs to coordinate care for children with cancer, diabetes, and other complex conditions. Our experience does show that this model can work. We support the goal of providing care coordination for as many children with complex care cases as possible. And we have spoken with Chair Abler about some of the concerns that we have with the current language. And we're going to continue to work with him and with the department to find language that helps achieve the goal of broadening access to care coordination for our kids without prescribing a particular model of implementation. So thank you again for your time today and to Representative Abler for his work on this.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. Do you have another person with you that wishes to testify?
Yes, hello, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marnie Moore, and I'm here on behalf of Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare. Gillette believes in care coordination. We provide care coordination. We have a full staff of nurses providing care coordination 7 days a week, 10 hours per day. They provide consultation to both families and primary care physicians. We support the concept of this bill, and we look forward to working on language with Representative Abler, the department, and the children's hospitals. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. I see I have a question on this topic in particular.
Thanks.
Okay. First of all, Representative Franson is on the list, but you're waiting. All right. Okay. Then we will have Representative Loeffler and then Representative McDonald.
Thank
Representative Loeffler.
Madam Chair. And
is it to a particular testifier?
Actually, to the last two testifiers. I'm wondering whether
Ms. Wolf and Ms. Moore, if you'd like to come back.
Thank you. Sorry. I was wondering whether or not your current care coordination for children is being covered under the MAPMAP program or our Minnesota Care programs. Are you currently getting public program reimbursement for that, or are you only providing that for privately insured families? Have you tried to get reimbursement under the fee-for-service system for those services?
Ms. Wolf? Or? Okay, Ms. Wolf.
I can answer that question a little, and then I will come back with you and get more exact information for you. I do know that one of the problems with this is we do actually lose money, Children's does, because a lot of the services that we provide in terms of nurse practitioners or our nurse lines or the call-in services are not reimbursable under some of those programs. So in terms of the breakout of whether they're private or payer, we provide them to all our patients, but I don't know in terms of reimbursement what gets reimbursed and what does not. But I do know that it's not nearly as much as we would like, and we do lose money on a number of the services that we provide.
Representative Loeffler?
Thank you. That's and I was going to see if Gillette knew more detail about theirs, but I appreciate getting the information back.
Absolutely. I'll follow up.
Sure. Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare provides this service to all of our 23,000 patients who require it. There is no compensation for this, is my understanding. We spend approximately $1 million per year on care coordination, and that's uncompensated.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. And Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This question is for Ms. Moore or Ms. Wolf. Under the care coordination in regards to the telehealth or in-home video, is that a service that is offered by the Gillette Children's Hospital for the children for care coordination as well?
Ms. Moore?
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, yes, we do provide telehealth. We do not provide video conferencing, but the telehealth we provide is our nurses. They're available via the telephone, and that's a pretty low-cost, efficient way to provide the care coordination.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. Representative McDonald?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a follow-up question.
Please.
Ms. Moore, do you have any figures as to what that saves the Children's Hospital in the telehealth?
Ms. Moore?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative McDonald. I do not know how much we save per year on this, but I can certainly report back to you with those numbers.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. Mm-hmm. Representative McDonald?
That would be great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Mr. Deal is going to be happy to spend length of time with people talking about the merits of Gillette Children's Hospital at a later time if they want in their offices. So.
Thank you, Representative McDonald, and thank you, Representative Abler, and so on. A question that I have, I would expect that for either Ms. Moore or Ms. Wolf, I would expect that there's probably a lot of things in the course of your doing business that you have improved things, and I think the recognition is not everything in that gets compensated for officially, but that you have internal savings, better outcomes, and things like that. I would suppose that may be the case, Ms. Wolf.
Madam Chair, yes, absolutely. For us, Children's does make, and as do, I would say, the majority of the hospitals, investments and in programs that better the outcomes for patients and not necessarily the bottom line. So I think that this is something that we have always done. We've made an investment in the medical home because it does improve our patient care. The more that we can keep our children at home and treatment and facilitate that care coordination, I think that's better for the families and the children in general. So.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wolf. Representative Bagler.
And, you know, part of the problem with what they're, all the good work they're doing is they actually lose services they would have got paid for if they wouldn't have been so efficient. And so they lose business, the patient's happier, and we save some money. My interest in this is trying to find a way to actually pay for this service in a way that makes some sense and then get savings that can accrue to the state. So both the, whichever the providers of the service are, will actually get paid for what they do, and we'll get the quality and the savings that accrue to the families in the state.
And I think, Representative Abler, that's true with family physicians or primary care as well. I think that's a common thread, but we'll just stick to the subject. But I appreciate it very, very much. And now we have another testifier, Ms. Twyla Braze.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Keep working.
Yeah.
And if you think
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Twyla Braze. I'm president of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. And I haven't had the opportunity yet to talk with Chairman Abler about some of the pieces of the bill, some of which we appreciate and some which we're concerned about. So I'll just go over them. And I know that you said that you're working on some of these sections and they aren't complete. So let me just tell you about Section 1 that has to do with the care coordination. That the very last line of that, that care coordination services must be available through in-home video, telehealth management, and other methods. We don't know what the other methods are, but there could be families who do not want to have in-home video or may not want to be part of telehealth. And so I just want to bring that particular piece to your, because that's concerning to us, that it could be limited to that. We don't know what the other methods are. So I'll move on to Section 2, and I, too, recognize this as any willing provider and knew that... that would be a good thing from our perspective. We do agree that the provider tax, everybody pays it, but they can't get access to lots of those patients. And I think one of the other interesting things about what the state does is it has these quality reports and all these different providers with the idea that we're supposed to all pick whoever is a quality provider. And the interesting thing, of course, is that most people can't leave their network. Mm-hmm. And so, any willing provider would actually, even though we don't believe in what the quality reports necessarily say, and we believe that data can be made to look however you want it to look. But the fact of the matter is, if you're going to have quality reports but people can't leave their networks, then, you know, it's kind of a worthless thing to be doing. We appreciate the fact that you took out that for the amendment. We like that you took that out particularly and then changed all the pieces about compliance and comply. And then in Section 4, our concern here is that the statement starting at 3:30, the strategies must coordinate healthcare with social services and local public health. And you'll notice that these are moms who happen to be in an area where there are low birth weights in a geographic area identified by the commissioner. Well, these could be all sorts of moms. And moms who don't want to have social services and local public health involved anywhere in their lives. And so this is saying that they must do that, and then not only that, but that the outcomes of these births have to be reported, the outcomes of the delivery. And, you know, we look at that and we say, well, it can be very intrusive. And then when you think about outcomes, I think there's just, I don't know, there's just bad thinking about when it comes to outcomes. Because outcomes, there's a lot of things that go into outcomes that have absolutely nothing to do with the health plan, absolutely nothing to do with the doctor, the hospital. It has to do with the behavior of the individual. It has to do with their choices. It has to do with their culture, their genetics. There's a lot of things in outcome, and yet it would be something that decisions would be based on. I will move to Section 5 and say, lines 4:12 to 4:16, even though I know that this is probably part of the accountability. Again, it has to do with health outcomes, and I think I explained why I think that that's very subjective and doesn't really necessarily mean anything beyond the patient. And the last thing is Section 7, and we have never liked this, not the first time that this was provided. And so I just want to say that this is research. It's research on the patients, even though there might not be names, although you notice it talks about private or non-public data. But it's research, it's done without consent, and it's research that can be used in ways that the subjects might find objectionable. They may not want their data used for whatever it's going to be used for. And so I think it's really important to realize that if this is going to happen, even though it's summary data, right? The fact of the matter is the data could be used to say what people can and cannot have. It could be used to ration. It could be used to limit. It could be used for all sorts of purposes. So we don't believe in doing that without patient consent. So I just wanted to leave you with those thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Braze. I think we have a question. Representative Franson, you're good? All right. Are we all good? All right. We have another testifier, Ms. Kmit.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Catherine Kmit. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, and I just wanted to provide some context for the committee because I don't think we've had a chance to talk about the idea of any willing provider in this committee yet this year. But the reason, and Ms. Braze also referenced this. She likes this provision, and let me just say that one of the reasons why health plans exist is because they form networks of providers. They form networks of providers because they can leverage lower cost for those who purchase the policies, so on behalf of individuals and smaller employers. And in theory, it makes sense. Why wouldn't anybody be able to participate in any network, any willing provider? The problem with that is that it costs money to contract with providers, to credential providers, to set up systems to work with various providers. And actually, we've heard from providers who say, we don't want to have an any willing provider network change because it might take business away from us. There's a, you know, they have met the quality standards. They're part of the health plans network, and to have them, to have anybody to come in would be a detriment to individual providers who are competing for business.
Thank you, Ms. Kmit.
Well, I just wanted to make one other comment. You know, I just think it's important that people understand that it's not being done to prevent people from seeing providers who they want to see. Our networks are actually very broad and very expansive, but there needs to be some understanding of the correlation, how it would affect cost as well, because as the network gets broader, it will cost more.
Thank you, Ms. Kmit. We're getting short in time. Representative Abler, do you want to respond? Otherwise, Representative Huntley wants to weigh in.
I'll let him go. I'll summarize at the end.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Representative Huntley?
Madam Chair and members, I certainly don't agree with everything in here, particularly the any willing provider, but most everything else I do agree with. And just on the low birth weight babies, normal delivery costs the hospital $5,000-$6,000. A low birth weight baby costs $40,000 to $50,000. Now, is it the healthcare provider's fault? Is it the mom's fault? Some cases, either one. I mean, Jackie Kennedy had a low birth weight baby that died. Obviously, she got good medical care. But we need to figure out ways in which we can get that stop or reduce the number of low birth weight babies just to save those dollars. And part of that's the providers. Part of it is the providers working with the social work. Part of it is working with the mom to get the mom to do what she should do. So I think this is a place we have to look at, and it's a place that we could save significant amounts of money.
Thank you, Representative Huntley and Representative Bieber.
Yeah, then we're just about out of time, but I'll just summarize that. Only one comment to make about the testimony. The data, the people that we're serving, Minnesota Care and Medical Assistance, we are the payer. And I think we need to know what we're paying for. We've heard that more than once from many sources. But I think the data about who we're serving is important to us, the same as a health plan can evaluate their own data. So that's why I'm comfortable with us working on our own clients in a way that's very, very safe. And the second thing is, the people have improvements on language here. I'm absolutely open to it. And the last thing is, I was happy to, it's always nice when people kind of agree on things to work together. Yesterday, I was so happy Ms. Braze and the Hospital Association agreed on a provision, except that they didn't like one of mine. So that was the kind of happy news, sad news part of yesterday. So that's all I have, Madam Chair. And if you wouldn't mind holding it over for possible inclusion, that would be great.
So done, Representative Abel. And Representative Huntley, I just want to remind you that Mrs. Kennedy also is a smoker. So I don't think it had much to do with quality or price. I think it had to do with that, and I agree with that. Yeah. And having had a low birth weight, it isn't necessarily the case. So we are adjourned. Thank you.